Blog Talk Radio.
It's your boy TP Timeless back at the helm. I'm about to set this thing off right. Welcome to the Monday Night Sports Wrap Up. Let's get focused. I got 60 minutes locked and loaded here in Sports City. I done took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside the kitchen. Timeless is alive. Let's go, Sports City. Hope y'all ready. Okay, the call-in number is 917-889-9592. You got the next 60 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but you're here with the chef. So like I said, we got a lot of interesting stuff to jump into. 60 minutes of the best sports, food for thought, dishes that y'all could get across the World Wide Web. And we've been doing a lot of work. Thank you for everybody that's been getting tuned back into the kitchen. Thank you for the numbers that we've actually been seeing for the past couple of days or so. On behalf of Sports City, I'm going to do the best that I can to get this thing rolling. Calling in by way of the state of South Carolina, my co-host, my co-chef, big brother Ramon from the borough of Brooklyn, Mr. Knight, a.k.a. Nostradamus. Welcome to the wrap-up. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm fine.
Okay, fair enough. We also have another caller here calling in by way of the state of Georgia. We have Matt in the building. Matt, welcome to the wrap-up. How are you feeling this evening?
Pretty good.
Okay, everybody's being short today. Well, I know before we got into the kitchen today, Mr. Knight wanted to cook first. So I'm going to let him get his dish out there first. If you call in, let me know if you want to get in. Just press 1, raise your hand so we can get you in here as best as possible. I don't want to pull you in if you're not in a comfortable setting. But, Mr. Knight, set us off tonight so we can get the sport wrap going.
Well, as you all know, or most of you probably know, Brandon Marshall came out and made a statement today concerning Geno Smith. His exact words, unlike what's being reported, is that Geno Smith did nothing wrong that day. He didn't say Geno did nothing wrong. He didn't say Geno was innocent, as you know, the managed matters and the rich Saminis who do nothing but spout nonsense and falsehoods and basically lies about the Jets and the organization have been saying. It's not what the man said. His exact statement was, Geno did nothing wrong that day. Now, my issue is this. I find it interesting that everybody wants to talk about Ryan Fitzpatrick is a better option. I looked at Ryan Fitzpatrick's stats. He has 164 career touchdowns. He has 101 career interceptions. Most of his career, he's averaged about 11 interceptions a game. And I'm just ballparking the average because I didn't do the math. Okay, he's only had 3 seasons where he had under 10 interceptions. Under 10. He had a couple of seasons where he had 20-something interceptions. Okay? But Ryan Fitzpatrick is supposed to be a better option than Geno Smith, who's only been in the league 3 years. Then we hear about, well, Bryce Petty. Geno Smith threw for 11,000 yards in college, only threw 21 interceptions. Bryce Petty, and again, the numbers, I believe he threw for more touchdowns than Geno, but less yards, or maybe more yards than Geno threw for more touchdowns. They're basically the same player, but Bryce Petty's supposed to be, he's supposed to be a better option than Geno. But everything you hear about Bryce Petty is everything you heard about Geno Smith when he was a rookie. He's having problems hitting receivers. He's having problems commanding the huddle. All the things you heard about Geno Smith, who was basically the same guy, same quarterback coming from the same type of offense, same type of system, a spread offense, where he's generally not really under center a lot. So I'm asking myself, What's the difference? Why is it that when a black quarterback comes out and struggles, oh, he can't be a backup, he's got to be out of the league? Ryan Fitzpatrick has been in the NFL for 13 years. 13 years. Most of his years, he's had over 12 interceptions a season. Yet somehow he's thought of as, oh, someone who can be a backup. He can be a good backup. You know how many black backup quarterbacks around the league? Anybody? You got Charlie Batch. You got Logan Thomas. I'm sorry, Matt, go ahead.
Is Michael Vick still play?
Nope. You have maybe four, and I'm being generous at four. So my question is this. Why is it that a young black quarterback can't be allowed to struggle when it comes to the NFL? You either got to become a wide receiver or a running back, or you don't get to be a backup at all. But the Bryce Pettys and Ryan Fitzpatricks and Sean Hills of the world can stay in the league for 20 years.
I think there's more than four, but we got an interesting call coming in, calling in by way of the state of California, the host of multiple shows here at Sports City, back in the kitchen on his duty, breaking news, Brian Hughes. Welcome to the Wrap Up. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm feeling fantastic, Ty. Just listening into the show. I really, really, really was ready to jump on board and high-five Chandler and give him some praise for going the right direction. But I got to tell you, Chandler, I agree with a lot of what you said there until you went to the black quarterback thing. Here's what I will say, guys. I agree, and Ty, we've had this conversation off air, so Chandler, he can give you peace of mind. I have said that I unequivocally that I think Geno gives them their best chance to win. That's why I think this was such a big blow. That's why I think that him missing 10 weeks is, there's no other way of putting it, a big blow to the New York Jets franchise. Number one, by far and away, it's not even close. He's the most mobile of the quarterbacks. And if you watch Geno last year, and Chandler, I know you did as a Jets fan, I try to watch a lot of the rookie quarterbacks. I go back and watch the NFL 22 film. He made a lot of plays with his legs. I mean, you can go back to week one, and basically he won them that game with his legs. That's not something that Ryan Fitzpatrick or Bryce Petty really brings to the table, number one. Number two, you can look at other quarterbacks that are not black, a.k.a. Blaine Gabbert, who really only had two full years and was a top five pick, and he was out in Jacksonville. Now, you could very easily make the argument, look, Geno's had better numbers, he's had better stats. You know what? And the devil's advocate could say, well, yeah, but he's also had a lot more talent around him. What I would say is, let's look at individual organizations and how they handle quarterbacks. You look at Green Bay, guys, and how they've always handled quarterbacks, even before Brett Favre was there, when they had Marinovich and Favre came in. When Favre was there and they brought Rodgers in, now they've got Hundley in there, and this is a guy that we've all talked about. I don't care if he's black, white, green, yellow, purple. We've all talked about this kid had immense talent. He just needed the right tutelage. I'm telling you, you watch, Brett Hundley will develop into a great quarterback because he's in a QB-friendly system, and he's in with an organization that understands that, you know what, not every quarterback is going to come out of college ready to take over the NFL the way that Andrew Luck did. And you know what, I'm sorry, I know they're implementing more and more of these spread principles, but the bottom line is, you look at some of these guys like Derek Carr. He played pretty well last year, but you know what? A lot of people said, hey, look, he didn't live up to the billing and, you know, this and that. What I would say is, you know what? It's incredibly difficult to be a quarterback that's drafted in the top 15 picks anyways, because let's be honest, you're going to a team that's probably horrific at best. Horrific among the offensive line. There's a reason why they only won 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games, okay? And in the Jets' case, and Chandler, you know this, the reason why they only win 2, 3, 4, 5 games every year is 100% on the offense. They've got one of the best defenses in the NFL. Nobody's going to argue that. They've got an incredible kicker. They've got a really good punter. They have some ineptness on offense. Now, bringing in Brandon Marshall definitely helps. I don't think there's any question about that. But nobody is going to convince me that Geno Smith was not the best option at quarterback. And you know what? All we're hearing from Todd Bowles, this is just party chatter, guys, because I don't think that there's any way that Ryan Fitzpatrick at this point in his career as a journeyman is going to quote unquote nail down the starting job unless he goes, let's say, 7-2, something like that or better. And most of that's going to be on the offense. I still think even at this point, I wasn't the biggest Geno supporter when he came out, but at the same time, I would still say the jury's still out. I don't think that we've really given this kid a fair shake. I think it takes at least 3 years for any quarterback to really evaluate where they're at. And I'd say the same thing about my own quarterback. You know what? He's regressed some, but let's also look at the fact that San Francisco, when you look at Colin Kaepernick, this is his third full season as a starter. And I only make that comparison because they're both young guys and how drastically different their career trajectory is, but they're also both of African descent, let's say that. And all I would say is, did Geno maybe get a raw deal? Absolutely, but how many quarterbacks, David Carr, how many quarterbacks have we seen get a raw deal, Blaine Gabbert, going to a team that doesn't have a plan for them when they come in? And I agree with you, Chandler. I heard the exact same thing. I heard Brandon Marshall stick up for him and say, hey, look, you know, he did nothing wrong today. I heard that as well. My bigger issue is, how many times on the practice field do we see a pass rusher just touch the quarterback and the offensive lineman go crazy? How was this guy allowed to go over to Geno, get into a scuffle, and full-on cold cock him and knock him out not only for one game, two game, but 10 weeks, and nothing happened to this kid? I mean, I guess that would be a better question for Chandler, but that's where I stand on that.
And, Brian, you missed the entire point of what I said. As always happens, whenever someone brings up race, you missed the entire point of what I said. Well, I'm speaking about backup quarterbacks in the NFL. I'm speaking about the fact that black quarterbacks who fail aren't given the opportunity to be backup quarterbacks. Geno Smith will never play for the Jets again, number one, and he won't get a shot with anybody else. Okay? This is Rich Jones getting. This is Terrell Pryor had to change positions. Now, Blaine Gabbert, by the way, is a backup quarterback in this league. David Carr is a backup quarterback in this league. I can go down a list of failed white quarterbacks who came and who were made backups, and I can go down a list of black failed quarterbacks who were either told to change positions or they weren't given another opportunity. That's the point. Not just about Geno Smith. Point is that when a black quarterback comes into the NFL and fails, why are there no backup jobs for them?
Well, my response to that, and I apologize for not hearing the question correctly, would be, once again, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't believe NFL teams are blackballing black quarterbacks. You look at Thaddeus Lewis. Tyrod Taylor. There's a lot of black backup quarterbacks. I think bottom line is, if you can help, hold on, I'll let you talk. If you can help a team win, then they're going to pick you up, bottom line, regardless of what color you are.
Thaddeus Young, Thaddeus Lewis, third string. Tyrod Taylor's third string. They weren't the backups. They were the third quarterback. Logan Thomas was the third quarterback, but he played last year because they didn't trust Bruce Stanton. You got Charlie Batch in Pittsburgh. Give me another one. That's the number two. Not on the roster, not the number three, the number two guy that they say, if our quarterback goes down, you're coming in next.
You got Tavares Jackson and you got E.J. Manuel.
Okay, and right now E.J.'s the number three quarterback in Buffalo. And you got Tavares. I said I doubted there were four. We just named four backup black quarterbacks. It's 32 teams. It's 32.
You also got Joe Webb, too, but I think Joe Webb is the third string. A lot of them are third string. You are right.
So,
I think
look,
Here is my point, though, Chandler, and I'm not disagreeing with you that the number of backup quarterbacks, if you look at the black to white ratio, doesn't favor white, you know, maybe the white competitors over the black competitors. But in my heart, as a white guy, I, you know, no way, shape, or form am I saying that I understand the struggles that the black quarterback faces. But as a white guy, I don't care if you were black, white, Asian, Hispanic, if you were Filipino, if you were from Bolivia, Yugoslavia, if you could throw the football and I thought you could help my team, I'd want you on my team. I'm just asking a question back to you. You're looking at it big picture. There's not a lot of black backup quarterbacks. My question to you would be, Is there a lot of black quarterbacks that are out there that you think deserve an opportunity to be a back right now that aren't?
Yeah, I'd say that Geno Smith will never get a job in the NFL after this. And we all know
that. I would bet money. I disagree with you. I bet money that Geno Smith will start a game for the Jets this year.
Geno Smith is done as the Jets starting quarterback if Todd Bowles has his way. Geno won't get a job as a backup. Michael Vick can't get a sniff of a job. But people are but the Jets reached out to Matt Flynn and Rex Grossman.
I was going to come out on Michael Vick.
So let's be realistic.
Sean Hill is still in the league. You're telling me Michael Vick is not better than Sean Hill?
I don't think so. Not at this. And Michael Vick's not even. Michael Vick doesn't even look like a shell of himself, former self. And the bottom line is, you may like the way that Michael Vick throws the ball better than Sean Hill and athleticism-wise, but let's be honest, Michael Vick cannot stay healthy. How good is a backup quarterback if they're not dependable? If you have to pick one trait that your backup quarterback has, it's dependability, so that when I need you to come in, you can come in, and that's the one trait Michael Vick does not have. That's not a black or white thing. That's a injury-prone thing.
Okay, so Michael, I'd rather have a quarterback who can't throw the ball, is going to cost me games, rather than one who may be able to last a couple of games as my backup. Because if my starter goes down,
you know, and Chandler, honestly, that's not even close to a fair assessment. Sean Hill may not have the strongest arm in the league, but Ty had him on his team. I had him as a Niners backup. He's very effective at what he does, and he's the type of guy, he will not lose games for you, and he's going to keep your team in games.
Really?
Okay. Absolutely.
Okay.
Go.
Okay. Okay. And okay. You know what? Okay.
Ty, you had him as a quarterback. Am I lying?
No. He was on Detroit. He's in St. Louis now. I'm not gonna lie. You gotta know that I support Sean Hill, but if I had to pick between the two, it's very dangerous. I'd be safer going with Vic, because Vic can scramble and get out of those situations. But the one knock that I have outside of Michael Vick is his accuracy. His accuracy is not the best at the quarterback position. And right now, his legs can't get him out of too much trouble. So that's the one thing that I'm looking at Michael Vick, especially while he's getting older. The stuff that he used to depend on, he can't look to, you know, those escape routes and getting out of the pocket and staying away from pressure. So it is tough, and that's a very interesting aspect. But looking at what Brian said, how many African-American quarterbacks do you look out throughout the league that are behind the starter right now that you could say, well, look, he could go somewhere else and start? And thinking of the names like E.J. Manuel, I think he sold himself short because that was his job in Buffalo. They let Castle come in there and take that job from him. Like, they're content with that. Tavares Jackson, like I said, and Chandler, you know, I've been the biggest advocate against him. He's injured now. So now they have to go with Russell Wilson because he just got hurt in the preseason game. Joe Webb, I mean, he ran the show in Minnesota. I think he's down there in Tampa Bay right now, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think he'll get a shot to back up anybody. I think he'd be a third-string kind of guy because he's behind Glennon. You know, Glennon's behind Jameis right now. And these are me, you know, thinking quickly off the top of my head on African-American quarterbacks that are within the league that I could potentially think that can start due to somebody being injured, but I don't think somebody would make a trade or pick up one of these guys and say, you know what, run the show right now in Jacksonville or run the show right now in Houston. Like, I don't think that's a situation. And also Stephen Morris. Stephen Morris, the former Hurricane quarterback, he is the number two option in Jacksonville, but that, you know, that's a tough situation in itself down there anyway.
Yeah, and you know what? That's my point, is there's all, you know, I can see the same thing on most of the white backup quarterbacks in this league. Most of them, I wouldn't trust them to run my team. Let's be honest. You really going to tell me that Ryan Fitzpatrick deserves a job at this point in his league? Now, I'm not saying it's a black quarterback that he should, because it's not that many black quarterbacks, first of all. And then when they do come out, they convert them to another position. Tim Tebow keeps getting chances in this league. Terrell Pryor had to change positions. Tim Tebow keeps getting chances. Terrell Pryor had to change positions, or they told him, no, you will be out of football. No one wants to give him a chance to change his motion or figure out how he has to do it.
And you know what?
It's been this way the entire time. And granted, it's not as obvious now. Black quarterbacks come out of offensive spread things where they run a lot, and the first thing that has to do is change position. The white quarterback coming out of social, Chase Daniel is a perfect example of a guy who is allowed to become a quarterback. But we all know in Missouri, he did a lot more running than he did passing. Okay, but he was allowed to come in and learn to become a quarterback, and now he's the guy I would like to start for my team. Okay, but Terrell Pryor wasn't given that opportunity. My question is,
and in all honesty, though, Chandler, if we're really being honest, is Terrell Pryor not getting the opportunity and forced to change positions, is that because nobody else will be interested, or because he's under contract and the team is saying, hey, we want you here? Because there's nobody here that's going to disagree with you that Tim Tebow can throw the ball. There's nobody here that's going to convince me that Philadelphia signing Tim Tebow wasn't for the same reason the Jets did, which is a publicity stunt.
Terrell Pryor was told, unless you change positions, you will not play in the NFL. That is why he changed positions. Because after he went to Cleveland and they said to him, you're not going to be a quarterback. If you come here, you're going to change positions, or you're not coming here. After he actually did the lead in Oakland, and Oakland said, well, we don't like your style, you should change positions. The man was told. You see what the reports are. You can look them up. I don't have to make it up. You can actually look it up. He was told, you will change positions or you will not be in this league.
And you know what? I don't even have an argument for that, because, like, and once again, I don't think Terrell Pryor necessarily is an NFL QB right now. I think he's a guy who could be developed into that. I don't think Tim Tebow is an NFL quarterback. I said people before, I was a supporter, Tyus knows this. I never said he was a good quarterback. What I said was, you can't knock the guy for winning games. I never said he was a good quarterback. I never said third down and 10, I need a 15-yard dig route thrown that I want Tim Tebow throwing the ball. Nobody is going to say that. Nobody, and even Philadelphia fans, nobody wants to watch that guy throw the ball in Chip Kelly's spread offensive system. I'm just telling you. I understand the point, but what I would say is, outside of the novelty act, which is Tim Tebow, give me one other quarterback that hasn't faced the same type of adversity. Remember, Matt Jones was a quarterback coming out of high school or college, and he transformed into a decent wide receiver until his drug addiction took over. You look at guys like Ryan Tannehill. He was a wide receiver at Texas A&M. All of a sudden, they say, hey, we need a quarterback. You know, they switch his position. I just don't think it's as widely publicized, maybe, as everybody would think. But I think people change positions, just maybe not this late in the game, not at the NFL level.
Okay, Matt, what do you think about the discussion that's going on right now at the backup position, and especially with some of the names that were mentioned, some of the African-American quarterbacks that are in the league don't have the option of being backup or being able to start throughout the NFL?
Ty, I think that those two covered it real well, so I'm just going to listen here for a little while.
Okay, well,
good idea, Matt.
Anything else behind that, or will we get to another topic?
No, you can do another topic.
Okay, so since we are on the topic of quarterbacks right now, I kind of wanted to go to the Tebow situation, but we kind of already glossed over that. I know we could come back to Tim Tebow. But there's an elephant in the room in the NFL right now, and his name is RG3, a.k.a. Robert Griffin III. Now, we're talking about African-American quarterbacks. We're talking about a Heisman-winning quarterback right here in RG3. First season in the NFL, he gets to a postseason bid and helps the Redskins see a postseason bid. Now he's injury-riddled with a couple of the seasons, having spats with different coaches, learning different systems while he's in the NFL, and then he comes out with a recent statement to say that he is the best quarterback in the NFL. Now, I know, you're supposed to be very confident in what you do. You're an NFL quarterback, and you got to hold yourself to one of the highest prowesses throughout the league, but he has to know that he's looking up at somebody. He can't really sit like he's in the midst of the NFL and he's better than a Tom Brady, or he's better than a Peyton Manning, he's better than Aaron Rodgers, he's better than a Drew Brees. But I want to see how you guys feel right now in the kitchen with RG3 making this statement. In the past two seasons, he's been questionable, to say the least, in D.C. I want to see how you guys feel about it. Moving forward, I'll start off with you, Matt. Your thoughts on RG3's recent statement?
I'm sorry, what did he say?
Chandler, tell me what's going on and your thoughts on the RG3 situation, on the statement that he made about him being the best quarterback in the NFL.
Well, that's first I heard of it, but you know, I'm not really as connected as I need to be, but I don't mind him making a statement. I love his confidence. I think he's doing that, and that's a way to take a shot back at his coach. Jay Gruden, since the day he got there, has continually put this young man down. He's questioned his intelligence. He's questioned his effort. He's questioned everything about this young man. Everything. Okay? And he's done it publicly. He's done it a lot. He's still doing it. You know, every time you're a leak coming out of Washington, trust me, it's from Jay Gruden. So I don't have a problem with him doing it because I understand why he's doing it. He's telling his coach, okay, you think I'm stupid? Okay, this is what I think. So now, if I'm supposed to be the best and you're supposed to be an offensive guru, how come you had three quarterbacks here last year and all of us stunk up the joint? You know what I'm saying? Think about that, Jay Gruden. So I think it's a way for him to take a shot back at his coach without doing it overtly and bringing, I guess, that tension that's already there. Everybody knows it's there. So the other guys don't have to answer questions about him and the coach. Now, they'll answer questions whether, you know, because people are just laughing, well, it's just RG3 being RG3. I personally think it's a way for him to take a shot at his coach.
Okay, Brian, your thoughts behind this recent situation that RG3 has rolling, that he is the best quarterback in the NFL. And I get it, and I understand you're supposed to be confident, but real is real. And where the Redskins are positioned right now, I'm going to be honest in saying this. I don't think he's the best quarterback in the NFC East. In his own division, I do not think he's the best quarterback there. I mean, it's debatable between Romo and Eli. I mean, one quarterback, and granted, if you want to give the defense the credit, you know, maybe the Giants defense that might have gotten him in Super Bowls or what have you, but you have one that's brought hardware back to the division. RG3's ahead of these guys. Your thoughts on the statement?
I don't know. You know what? I got to agree with Chandler. We disagreed on the last topic. I agree with him on this topic. When you're playing the position of quarterback, and you guys know, but as fans that are listening in right now that have never played the game, more so than maybe any other position, you have to have ultimate confidence in yourself, in your teammates, you know, in your offensive line, in your play call, in everything. I mean, there's a reason why you hear the terms and the terminology that we're going to tailor the offense to fit the quarterback. And the reason for it is because you need that quarterback to be as comfortable as possible. And I'm sorry, Ty, I completely disagree with you on this. I know you said you get the confidence thing. If there's one quarterback in the NFL that does this quarterback in the NFL, and just haven't been given an opportunity to show how good they are, then they don't deserve to be in the NFL. And that goes for the guy who's, if you don't have that hunger or desire, you know what? There's a reason why we have guys like Hines Ward. There's a reason we have, you know, James Harrison. There's a reason why, you know, you have all these undrafted guys, Rod Woodson. You know, you have all these guys that came from nowhere, obscurity, and end up being some of the greatest players to ever play the game. And it's because, you know what? Scouts don't always get it right. GMs don't always get it right. Coaches don't always get it right. And you know what? The one thing you can't measure is somebody's heart. And you know what? If anybody playing a position doesn't truly think once they've made it to the NFL level that they're the best at what they do, then they don't deserve to be there. They don't deserve to be a starter. I commend Robert Griffin. You know what? There's nothing wrong with saying I'm the best quarterback in the NFL. He may not have the stats to show it, but he needs to have that confidence and swagger. That's what got him to Rookie of the Year. That's what got him to where he was in year one. Remember, he was a quarter away from absolutely demolishing the Seahawks and Russell Wilson before we knew how good the Seahawks and Russell Wilson was. He was manhandling that defense almost single-handedly on offense. And you know what? I think Robert Griffin has a lot more to show than we've seen. And you know what? I'd love to see this kid get his confidence back, his swagger back, and I think their GM, Scott McLuhan, is doing exactly what they need to do. Get some beef up front, run the ball, and allow this kid to do what he does best, which is play action, play the deep pass, but get Alfred Morris the ball. And I completely commend him for the comment. I can't imagine somebody saying, hey, you know what, I'm the seventh best quarterback. That comment wouldn't make sense to me.
I think it would, because then put him in the elite conversation. Tell me what intangibles bring to the table. Other than that, he's a quarterback that has speed and elusiveness. What does he bring to the table that betters him amongst the rest of them?
Let me throw that question right back at you. Take black, white, gray out of it.
I'm going to answer your question with a question.
Listen to me. Other than stats, okay, which are subjective because you have to have blockers block, you have to have receivers catch the ball. Outside of those, when you look at arm strength, speed, intelligence, athleticism, agility, all the things that make a great quarterback, accuracy, tell me one thing that Robert Griffin is not elite at. He has all the intangibles to be an elite quarterback, and even more so than some of the quote-unquote elite quarterbacks. But you know what? He doesn't have elite, elite help. Elite help. You know what? Maybe the offensive system.
He misses on a lot of throws. Listen, I was watching the game when they were playing the Vikings. He had Pierre Garçon in the middle of the field in front of him, no defender around him. Missed him completely. Game over. Look, there is a situation. I know you're trying to make an argument for him. There is no way that you could put him in the top 10 conversation. You can't.
And I can name ten
quarterbacks right now, quickly, better than RG3. Sorry, I can do it quickly.
I just said you're taking once again what I said out of context, because I said that there's no trait that he has that's not elite, meaning that there's no reason that he could not be quote unquote the best quarterback in the league. If we're gonna look at stats, and stats are the end-all, be-all, then your best quarterback in the division is not even in the conversation, because Eli Manning is a turnover machine, okay? If we're going to look at stats as the end-all, be-all, then you know what? More than likely, Drew Brees is probably the best quarterback in the league because he throws for a gazillion yards every year because they throw the ball 700 times a year. I mean, if that's the end-all, be-all, and that's what all, you know, everything is going to be evolved around, look, I'm not saying he is a top 10 quarterback. My opinion is my opinion. What I'm saying is Robert Griffin is entitled to his opinion. He has all the traits and necessary skills to be the best quarterback in the league, and if his mentality doesn't tell him, I am the best quarterback in the league, I just haven't had an opportunity to show it, then he shouldn't be in the league. You're telling me if you ask any one of the guys that are quote-unquote top 15 guys, including Andrew Luck, behind closed doors, if you ask Aaron Rodgers, if you ask even Peyton Manning now with the pea shooter arm, any of these guys, if they're the best quarterback, if you don't think that they're going to say yes, you're fooling yourself. You're kidding yourself.
Okay, but Brian, these are the quarterbacks that are in the discussion. RG3 is not in that discussion. Let me put it in a better term for you so you can understand it. Let's put a quarterback that plays similar type of football like RG3. Who's better? Colin Kaepernick or RG3?
Once again, you're comparing apples
to
oranges.
Why? 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 Just answer the question.
Apples to oranges. Apples to oranges, dude. One of them had his knee literally wrapped around. Don't ask.
You're not going to answer. You're not going to answer.
You know what? If you want to go base, what are we basing it off of? Last year? Last year it was Colin. Based off last year, coming rehabbing from a knee injury. Huh?
All purpose. Who's the better
quarterback? Says Colin Kaepernick, who was drafted higher, who had the quote unquote higher intangibles. I mean, it depends on what you're talking about. Once again, I'm not making an argument for Robert Griffin III is the greatest quarterback to ever play the game. What I'm saying is, if you look at the intangibles that make up a great quarterback, intelligence, agility, acceleration, speed, huge arm, accuracy, he has all those things. Sure, his accuracy suffered last year, Ty, but you know what? You go back and look at him in his rookie year when he had the confidence necessary, he was a good quarterback. He's just being misused.
That's what I was going to say, Ty, is by you using Kaepernick as the measuring stick, Kaepernick has been playing in a system that fit him. They tailored the offense to fit him. The only season Robert Griffin played in an offense that fit him, how did he look? He looked like the next coming, like the second coming of you know, whatever your all-time favorite quarterback is. You know, he looked like he was going to wind up in the Hall of Fame. And then they brought in another system that doesn't fit him. You can't, you know what I'm saying, this square peg, round hole. Colin Kaepernick's been in the system that fit him his entire time. And even Kaepernick, you got people talking about he's not this, he's not that. They're already talking about Kaepernick is out of San Francisco, you know, after the season because, you know, they're going to revamp and they're getting a new offense. I mean, they were saying that last year with Harbaugh. Kaepernick shouldn't be the starter. Remember that? How they were questioning Kaepernick just last season. They were questioning Kaepernick. On every national broadcast the Niners were on, all you heard them do was talk about the things Kaepernick couldn't do. All you heard. All of a sudden, it became Colin Kaepernick, he can't do this, and he can't do that, and he can't do this. All he can do is run. All he can do is run. He can't make the right throws. He can't do this. And Brian knows I'm not lying because he's a 49er fan. You heard nothing but negative about Kaepernick last season because the team struggled. And all of a sudden, all of his deficiencies were magnified, and they started pointing out all things. Well, he's not really. He still hasn't learned how to take the ball from under center. No, yes, he still has it. He still runs first. Even though he's looking downfield, he still runs first. So there are things he still has to learn to do. Same with Robert Griffin. The difference between the two of them is that Kaepernick had a coach who said, you know what, do what you do best. Whatever it is, as long as we win the game. Robert Griffin is playing for a coach who says, no, you're going to do it the way I want you to do it. Your skill set be damned. That's the difference between the two of them. Because you put Kaepernick in D.C., you put Robert Griffin in Frisco with Harbaugh, and Niners will have the same results with Harbaugh and Griffin, okay? And Kaepernick and Gruden would be the exact same place that RG3 and Gruden are, with Gruden talking about everything he can't do.
Okay, well, let me do it like this. The number 10 quarterback that I think in my top 10, similarities in their style of play, Russell Wilson or RG3, who would you leg up there?
Again, based on the system, because Russell Wilson fits the system. Again, Russell Wilson is still not a guy you want throwing the ball 30 times a game. He's still not that guy. You understand what I'm saying? He still has to learn how to do some things. He's still not good at throwing the ball 30 times a game. So in the system that Seattle plays, I take Russell Wilson. But if I put RG3 in that system, this Seattle Seahawks would win. You put Russell Wilson there with Jay Gruden, Russell Wilson would struggle. It's about the system that these guys are playing in, man. You got to look at the skill set. Russell Wilson is very similar to RG3. He doesn't take as many hits as RG3 because you learn how to get down. But if you put him in D.C. with the way they're trying to play, Russell Wilson would struggle. I guarantee it.
That is very interesting. That is very interesting. But like I said, like I understand the confidence that he has to have built to make this type of statement. I just think that right now, one, this puts a bullseye on you right now. I really do. I think a lot of these defenses are going to pin their ears back and come after you, knowing that you're nursing an ankle, knowing that you're nursing a knee. Both of your wheels are in question right now, and you're still a guy that doesn't really have that high football IQ. Because you still don't choose the slide like you're supposed to. You still don't do that. And not to say that that's an interesting attribute to have, but you at least get to save yourself. Because right now, the MO that's hanging over RG3's head is, he's injury prone. He's not making the smart assessment out there on the field that's better for his team right now. And to be truthfully honest, who knows if he's the best quarterback on his team right now? Who knows
who's
that?
Better? Who's better?
Who knows that? This discussion that they got Kirk Cousins better than him right now.
How did Kirk Cousins look last year under Jay Gruden, Ty? How did Kirk Cousins look when Jay Gruden put him in a game?
He didn't look great to me just like he didn't look great to you. But there's people that still think Cousins deserves that job. Even Colt McCoy. When Colt McCoy came in there, when Colt McCoy came in there after both of them got hurt, Colt McCoy led them to a winning record. Colt McCoy didn't lead them straight.
Okay, Colt McCoy.
They started losing again. They put all these people in there.
He had one good game, Ty, when he beat Dallas. His next two games, he was throwing interceptions and he started looking shaky. So then Gruden, again, we have to look at the coach here because the coach is a fraud. Instead of, again, allowing the kid to work through his mistakes, what did he do? He yanked him out and went back to RG3. If you look at the issues of the three quarterbacks in D.C., they can all be traced directly to the coach. Because you can't tell me that you put three quarterbacks in there, you're supposed to be an offensive guru, and all three of them looked terrible. All three of them. Kirk Cousins' stock was so high, they could have traded him for a number one draft pick. That's how much teams coveted him. Okay? And you know that. Teams were salivating over getting Kirk Cousins. And thanks to Jay Gruden, the only people who still believe in Kirk Cousins are the people in D.C. Thanks to Jay Gruden. You can't just put this on the quarterback and say, oh, he's not the best. There might be some people in D.C. who think Cousins is better, but when Jay Gruden put him on the field, it didn't show. It didn't show. So how can you say he's better when he looked just as bad as Robert Griffin did? He looked just as bad. That's what Griffin did.
Does RG3 lead this team to a winning record this season?
No, not with this coach. No, not with this coach. Not with this coach, not with this system. They will have a losing record.
Why is it all on the face of the coach and instead of the quarterback making the adjustment to make this work?
Because it's only it's only going to be his second full season. Okay? Coming from a spread offense. It usually takes a guy coming out of the offense 3 to 4 seasons to truly learn how to play under center. Because you got to remember, they've been taught most of their career, through high school and all the way through college. Okay? They're only looking at one side of the field. They're not doing any progressions. They're not doing the things that pro-style offense quarterbacks do. So they have to unlearn muscle memory and relearn new muscle memory. That takes time, Ty. It takes time. Time that these guys aren't being given. Matter of fact, I'll give you the perfect example. Randall Cunningham. How long did it take Randall to become a pocket passer? How many years did it take Randall?
A long time. Because Randall was ready to take off.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, you got Robert Griffin. You got Colin Kaepernick. You got Russell Wilson. You got Geno Smith. You got Bryce Petty. You have all these guys. Now, if it took Randall Cunningham years to become a true pocket passer, and Randall, as we all know, was much better in his later years, efficient and all those other things, in his later years than he was in his early years. His early years, he was spectacular. He was explosive. But Randall took a lot of big hits too, didn't he? Randall got hurt a lot. You know what I'm saying? But look at what they came from and what they had to unlearn and then relearn. And then if you have a coach that's not willing to still leave some elements of what you do best in while you're trying to learn the new stuff, you're basically fighting against your own body. You're fighting against your own brain because your instincts are screaming that you do this. You're like, no, I have to do this. So you look robotic. Your reaction time is less because you're thinking too much. This is about the coach here. And that's why Harbaugh gets so much credit, because he allowed Colin Kaepernick to do what he did best. Now, Harbaugh incorporated some pro-style stuff in there, but he kept some elements of that pistol at all times so that when push came to shove, his quarterback would be comfortable and it wouldn't be paralysis by analysis. That's why Harbaugh is such a great coach. That's why Gruden isn't. That is the perfect example of what we're talking about. Look at Pete Carroll, what he does with Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson doesn't constantly take the ball from under center. Russell Wilson still gets to run. Russell Wilson is learning how to scan the field, go through his progressions, all those things. But they're still keeping elements of what he does best in that offense. How'd that work out for Seattle? They got a Super Bowl.
They've been successful with it, yes.
Exactly. And that's why I'm putting it on the coach. Robert Griffin will never be successful with a coach like Jay Gruden. He needs a Pete Carroll. He needs a Jim Harbaugh. He needs a coach who is willing to adapt his system to fit the players rather than making the players adapt to the system.
Okay. Well, at least we are actually agreeing that he's not the best quarterback in the league for him to make this statement, though, correct?
I know he's not the best. I just like the fact that he made it because, again, I like any shot anybody takes at Jay Gruden.
Okay, great. Okay. That's all I needed. I mean, I understand the debate that we're having here, but I'm not letting RG3 get the leg up in making that statement. Caller number 917-889-9592. Press 1, let me know you want to get in here. We did get Brian back. Brian, welcome back. Anything that you'd like to say before we get away from the RG3 topic?
No, I mean, I heard most of what Chandler was saying, and I think he made a great analogy, a great point there with Randall. But, I mean, there are just so many guys. You could look at Rich Gannon. You could look at Chris Carter, who later in life, you know, was twice the quarterback. Dante Culpepper was much better when he got older. I just think that it's unfair for fans or for general managers to assume greatness in a year when the game that they play in college is not even, I mean, you could almost not call it football. It's that vastly different. And sure, you know, the NFL scene is incorporating more and more spread principles, but it's really, really difficult on these young guys when they come out of college. When they look up, they see the linebacker covering the slot guy, so they know preordained read says, hey, I'm going to the slot guy, and they get to the NFL, and all of a sudden they're mixing and matching. All the defensive linemen are up walking around, and they're like, whoa, because they've never had to read a defense in their entire life, because coaches in college only care about wins and losses, not about actually tutoring and teaching the players.
Okay, fair enough. Any topic that you want to bring to the kitchen, Brian, that we need to discuss on the wrap-up?
You know what, man? I'm just enjoying the dishes that you guys are serving. I actually wanted to, you know, my question, and I'm sure this is something you guys have discussed, but, you know, the AFC East, Chandler, your division, looks to be like a very, very competitive division. You know, you have a few key people
from a few key teams that could potentially miss games or more. I'm curious how you boys right now, if the season was to start today, what do you see the pecking order? Not necessarily this is the way the teams are going to finish, but how would you guys have them ranked going into the season right now?
Chandler, you can I'll start. Let you go for okay.
I'm putting it right on your plate there, Master Chef.
Okay, it's interesting because if I look at the AFC East, I like the way Buffalo stacked up. The one thing that I have in question of one of the teams is Miami's offense. A lot of people is putting a lot of high stock in what Tannehill could do, even though I think a lot of things have to come out of that backfield to take a lot of pressure off him to make some of these passes. Depending how this I don't even want to call it a lawsuit. I'll just say a case. The case goes with Tom Brady. If he can start the season out week one with the Patriots, I still feel like they're still in the discussion. But right now, I'm going to just look at it like Brady's out for the first four, right? So I'm going to be real, and this is crazy that I'm doing this before we even cover the AFC East. I go Buffalo. Oh, man. Buffalo's number one. I feel like Buffalo could shut this league down. I mean, this division down, especially with the Patriots out without Brady for the first four. Buffalo, Miami, Miami, New England, and New York. Especially with Geno being out, I think the Jets do finish in a cellar in the AFC East.
Did you just put New England third?
Yep.
Whew! All right, Matt, let me hear you. I know you're a Georgia fan, man. You gotta let's get some of that Georgia love sprinkled on top of this topic.
Chandler, are you available?
You know who wanted to start. Tom, Miami first, because Miami, based on how things stand right now, is the only team returning its starting quarterback. Think about that. Think about that right now. If the season starts with the things the way they are right now, Ryan Tannehill will be the longest tenured quarterback in the AFC East if everything remains the same and the season starts, okay, because Brady won't be there. And Garoppolo, I'm sorry, they're going to lose every game with him at quarterback. So I got Miami, then Buffalo, then New England, the Jets. Honestly, it's a toss-up because I think the Jets are going to finish at the bottom. I don't know that when Brady comes back, I think it's going to take him a couple of weeks to get his timing back. So they may well be 2-4, 3-5. By the halfway point of the season, because I think they're going to lose all four games with Garoppolo at quarterback. I think they're going to lose all four. If the four-game suspension of health, I don't see them winning any games. So if you think that Brady comes back, or take him another 2 weeks to get his feet under him, so you think he'll have some up-and-down games, so maybe they split, that puts them at 2-6, 2-6, 3-5 at best through eight games. And again, depending on, you know, what happens there, if they bring in Matt Flynn or Rex Grossman or Ryan Fitzpatrick or whoever the hell, you know, you got Sheldon Richardson who can't, you know, keep his foot off the gas apparently. You know, I think the team right now, if you pick to win a division, is Miami, believe it or not.
Wow. So, okay,
Okay, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
So, Ty, you got Buffalo right now as the front runner before the season starts, and Chandler's got Miami as the front runners. Both of you guys have the Jets finishing last, and I think that's reasonable. I still think New England's going to win.
The reason why I did that is because I'm going off of Brady with the suspension in front of him. If Brady's there for Week One, it's going to differ.
Okay, but let me ask you this, and you know what? This is a point that Chandler made maybe, I don't know, 2 months ago, and I think that it's at least worth noting. A quarterback that's in his mid-30s, does it not benefit this guy to miss 3 or 4 weeks? Do we really think timing is going to be that big of an issue for a guy that's been doing this 15 years? I mean, I'm asking you guys, do you think timing is really going to be that big of an issue for a guy that's been doing it as long as Brady? We're not talking for a guy in year one or year two, or does missing 3 or 4 games actually help him be more fresh down the home stretch?
Ty, I'll let you go first. Oh, you want me to go first? Well, I know Brady is still Brady. You still got to respect him behind center. But he's going to be rusty. Him sitting out, not at NFL speed for the first four games that he's going to potentially miss, he's going to be rusty. And let alone that the game that he's supposed to come back on, he has to start shooting because it's against the Colts. And if Andrew Luck sits up there and puts up another touchdown, just one touchdown against the Patriots, then the question starts to loom in front of Andrew Luck. And I don't even want to make it look like that because I respect Luck. But I think Luck is definitely going to make Brady compete for that game. It's not like he's going to come in here and win a game, you know, let's say 21 or 24 to 17. He's going to have to put up a 30-point effort. And I think Brady's going to be behind the eight ball on that.
I don't know, man. If it's anything like the pass meetings, he might not have to throw the ball one time.
That's true. That's true, too. If the Colts defense didn't, you know, learn anything from the past couple of seasons.
All right. Chandler, what's your thoughts on this before we move on?
Well, the thing is it's the lack of practice time. See, before, if he missed some games, well, he could still practice even though he wasn't playing. But he's not practicing. I don't know if you saw the game the other night. That first pass he threw, that was pure rust. That pass came up, dude, it looked like he was trying to throw the ball through a wall. And I've never seen him throw a pass like that except when he first got the job. He looked out of sync because he hasn't been practicing. That's why I say it's going to take him some time because, you know, where you develop, all of this stuff is on the practice field. He's not practicing. The hell with playing. I don't care about him playing. He's not practicing. So he won't get to practice the four games he's out. So I think it'll take him two weeks of practice to get back on track. That's two games. Now, Brady is kind of a slow starter anyway, so the second half of the season he's gonna be hell on wheels. But I truly believe that the first eight games that they win maybe three. And the only three they win are the three he plays. Okay, so he's number three of the four, but he will be rusty. Yes, he will be rusty because he won't be able to practice. And yeah, we talking about practice, I know. But that's really what it's going to come down to is the lack of practice time.
I'll be honest with you guys, and I know Chandler, you probably know the AFC East better than I do, you know, being that your team's in the division and you kind of keep an eye out on them. I just don't see any of these other teams winning double-digit games. You know what? The one thing about this division that we've always said, it kind of reminds me of the NFC West from a few years ago. Everybody could run the ball. Everybody played smash-mouth defense, but nobody had a quarterback. And I kind of feel like that's the same that could be said here. I know Ryan Tannehill is not a bad quarterback, but I don't know necessarily that he's a clutch quarterback either. And I don't know if you're going to get double-digit wins out of Buffalo and Castle, or if you're going to get double-digit wins out of Tannehill, or if you're going to get double-digit wins out of the Jets. And I know nobody is saying that, but my thought is somebody in this division is going to win double-digit games. And if it's not Buffalo and it's not Miami and it sure in hell ain't the Jets, then it's almost undoubtedly going to be New England.
I truly think that these teams take it personal in that division and stop watching Brady basically walk these Patriots all over these guys. One of these teams have to step up, and the receivers that Castle has on the outside with Watkins as well as Goodwin as well, he has speeds out there, Woods as well, and now that they got Shady McCoy, at least they got an offense that could put threats to each and every last one of those defenses out there. The only defense I feel like that could bring them some attention or a problem is the Dolphins defense, but I still think that this offense, being the Dolphins, has to put up points. They have to be able to put up points, and I don't see it. I'm not confident in Tannehill to go out there and give you 24 points per game on average. I think there'll be some games where he's hot and he's scoring the ball, but on average, I really question if he could give you 24 points a game. That's just me. I'm honest. I'm being honest right now.
Well, yeah, and I look at the fact that, like I said, if Newman starts out 3-5, and they go 7-1 in the second half. That's 10 wins, isn't it? It's still 10 wins. I think New England will get 10 wins. But I also think that either Miami or Buffalo is going to get the same number of wins, but they're going to have more wins in the division, and that's why that team will take the division. I think New England's going to get double-digit wins, but right now the Bills, as presently constituted, are 9-17. They're 9-7 with the defense they have and the offensive weapons they have, and just a decent quarter, just decent quarterback play gets them to 9-7. Average quarterback play, that's 10 wins. Just average. You know, Miami, if they get decent to average play out of Ryan Tannehill, 9-10 wins. So there are going to be a couple of teams in that division with double-digit wins. It's that the beginning of the season is going to be the tell-all. If Brady misses the four games, Patriots not winning the division. If Brady doesn't miss four games, the Patriots win the division.
Okay, we did lose Brian, but we are at the tail end of the show, though. I need a plug close out from you, Chandler, and we'll bring a lot of this back up in the cookout. I know we'll have a ton of this ready for everybody tomorrow, but give me a plug close out, anything that you like to promote as we get ready to shut down the kitchen for another episode of the Wrap-Up.
Thanks, Brian, Matt, for coming. And the least talked about quarterback in the National Football League, who should be the most talked about, is Teddy Bridgewater. You people haven't watched this young man. Teddy Bridgewater is the truth. He's the truth, okay? Teddy Bridgewater is the truth, okay? Watch him play so you can say you saw him before he became a Hall of Famer. I'm putting him in a yellow jacket right now.
He's not the dominant. This is Interactive Sports City. Y'all sit tight on this one. We'll be back here tomorrow, man. Check us out 7 days a week. We're back at it, man. I'm trying to get everything in full swing for Wednesday. Chandler told me I need to get my tail back in the kitchen on Wednesday, so we're trying to get that show piping for Wednesday. But SportsCityChefs.com, check out the website, the interviews, the blog, the chefs. We'll be back here tomorrow, same time, 7 p.m., for the cookout here. It's all about you. Call us for the cookout, man. Call and give us any topic that you want. We will throw this on the grill and have a good time throwing this one around the kitchen. But on that note, tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know. Yo, what is going on?